joining us for our fourth. Being recorded. Thank you so much for joining us for our fourth quarter conference call. Joining us on the call today is Craig Villanos, founder and CEO of Wealth Management Group. Craig, the call is yours.
Yes, thank you everybody for dialing in on a Thursday morning. If history's any guide, and it's the only guide I have, October is traditionally known for its volatility, and it has certainly lived up to its name in 2018. Here to help us break that down, to talk about what just happened, where we're likely to be going forward, we're joined today by David Halupnik, the Managing Director and Equity CIO for none other than Nuveen Asset Management, a TIAA-CREF company. David oversees all the strategic efforts and management of Nuveen's equity strategies. He's responsible for the investment process and performance of all of Nuveen's actively managed equity products, and specifically, he is the head of a sleeve for Dividend Value and their large cap equity select series. Prior to joining Nuveen, many from the Chicago area might recognize David's name when he used to run the investments over at Allstate Company. And because of the size of Nuveen Asset Management, when David speaks, markets tend to listen. So what I would like to do at this point in time is turn the call over to our guest speaker, David Halupnik. Please share with our audience your comments and thoughts as we enter the midterm election season.
Okay, thank you, Craig, and good morning, everyone. You know, so my first comment is we're in a correction. We are not in a bear market. And there's four basic things that I look at to help me figure out where we're at, and that is the economy, earnings, interest rates and inflation, and then finally valuation. So I'm going to go through each of those briefly and kind of give, you know, pluses or minuses on them. You know, so our economy is doing actually extremely well. For 2018, our real GDP should be up 3.5%, and that's really quite a good growth rate. Manufacturing here is strong. Unemployment is very low. Consumer confidence is high. Our leading economic indicators are actually re-accelerating, which means that this economy has longer legs to it. In 2019, we do expect the economy to slow down to about 2.5%. Growth, which is still a very good growth for the U.S. economy. It's going to slow down primarily because some of the benefits from the tax cuts will have worn off by that time. If you look outside the U.S., growth is slowing, and that has been a concern for the market, and that's been one of the reasons for this recent sell-off. Europe is pretty slow and slowing. Japan, you know, is growing about 1.5%, and for Japan, that's actually a pretty good growth rate. The real culprit here, though, has been China. China is the second largest economy in the world, so it does matter. And they have been slowing more than expected. The official figures out of China show them growing at 6.5%. Our best guess, though, is closer to 4%, which is slower than what China wants. Now, China has slowed primarily because the government was trying to deleverage their financial system. They do have a lot of debt over there. So they were trying to slow it, but in a controlled fashion. The tariffs that we have implemented on them have hurt them more, so the slowdown has accelerated. You know, the good news here is China has cut interest rates. They are spending more money again, so they are taking on more debt to spend on infrastructure, and they just implemented individual tax cuts. So we would actually expect China to begin their growth to accelerate in the first half of 2019. So that should end up being a market positive. You know, once we move into 19. So overall, I give the economy a plus. I mean, it is good for the markets. It's strong. It is going to slow in 2019, but still at a good pace. So, you know, we give the economy a strong mark. The second important area is earnings. And in 2018, earnings have been fantastic. Part of it is just good demand, good expense management, so good margins, but also the tax cut. So in the first and second quarter, earnings grew over 20% year over year. In the third quarter, and we're right now in earnings season, earnings should end up being up 20% year over year. So another strong quarter for earnings. As we look out to 2019, we do expect earnings growth to slow from, you know, to about 8 to 10%. Again, that's primarily because some of these tax benefits will now be, you know, lapping from 2018. Now, having said that, in the third quarter, we are starting to get, you know, signs of a little stress in corporate earnings. Expenses are going up, and that's on materials. Part of that's tariffs. Part of that is oil, just stronger economies. Labor costs are starting to go up. Transportation costs are starting to go up. So you are seeing, you know, some companies, you know, wave a little bit of a caution flag. But again, we think that's baked into the market, that's baked into estimates, because we do expect corporate profits still to be strong in 19, but to slow. You know, so here I give corporate profits a big positive too. You know, the third area is interest rates and inflation. Now here I'm going to give it neutral to negative. And really, inflation has really been contained. It is starting to move up slowly, but you know, nothing to worry about. So inflation looks pretty good. You know, the Federal Reserve is increasing interest rates, and this is spooking the market. So they just raised the federal funds rate by 25 basis points in September. They've made three raises this year. They'll probably make a fourth in December. So interest rates are going up. That is slowing housing. That is slowing auto sales as well. So the market is concerned that, you know, the Federal Reserve is going to slow economic growth maybe too much and too hard. So that's something that we have to watch out for. So, you know, right now on that front, I kind of give inflation, interest rates neutral to negative, and we do have to watch that going forward. Finally, valuation actually looks reasonable for the market. The stock market sells at 15 and a half times 2019 earnings. The historic average going back to 1926 is actually 15 and a half times. So the market's, you know, pretty reasonably priced. But when you do, you know, look at environments of low inflation, the stock market is actually average selling around 18 times earnings. Now, I think it's going to be hard to get to that type of level with the Federal Reserve raising interest rates. But my point here is, you know, the market's really not that expensive given this environment. So on the valuation side, I kind of give it a neutral. So overall, I kind of, you know, still am bullish on the market looking out. You know, what really turns the market down is a potential recession. So far, we're seeing almost no signs of that. Our best guess is we hit a recession in 2021 after the Federal Reserve is done with its tightening cycle. And typically, the market does well up until maybe about 6 months before a recession. So I still would look for 2019 to be a good year for the equity markets. I look for year-end 2018 to be good. And you probably could even go into 2020 with the market looking good. But then you do have to be cautious and aware if things start to look like we're ending this economic cycle, then you need to become more defensive. So with that, Craig, I'm going to stop my initial comments. I got, you know, I could go with questions or however you want to go from here.
Well, I believe I have a number of questions that may have been pre-submitted to you for some client inquiries. Maybe we can walk through those. But sure. I would like to center us back on something that you just closed with, which is your firm's forecast is for a recession to come into the fold in 2021 in conjunction with the end of the rate tightening cycle from the Fed. Why do you believe we could see that recession come all the way out to 2021, meaning this economy continues to smash records in terms of duration, when we've seen some of the talking heads only in the last 5 to 8 business days talking about that recession coming sooner? Well, what are the real underpinnings of strength that you see?
Yeah, so when you really do look at it, the credit market usually is a good leading indicator if there's trouble out there. And even through this recent sell-off and correction, you know, the credit market, the spreads on corporate debt, they've all remained very contained and very tight. You know, so it doesn't seem like there's any kind of stress in the financial system. So that's very good. Also, inflation does remain low. You know, so the Fed is still tightening. But at some point, if inflation doesn't pick up, there's going to be less of a need to tighten. So again, we could end up more a little bit longer with Goldilocks, where earnings grow, inflation is low, but we do got to get the Fed a little bit more behind us. So we do think, you know, and things right now are so strong too, you know, that, you know, it's just hard to even see recession coming. And another good point too, the latest leading economic indicators for the U.S., and they've been high but decelerating, Actually, the last one reaccelerated. You know, so again, that kind of tells us we're still quite a ways away from a recession.
No, I think those are very strong talking points. And you also said in that concluding executive summary that 2019 is good, but you also indicated you, if there was a predictor of performance, believe the finish to year-end 2018 could be strong. Why do you say that coming up with 2.5 months to go?
Yeah, you know, for a couple reasons. Number one is, you know, earnings are coming out strong, and the market has been a little spooked by some of these cost increases, but now the market's up nicely today because of strong earnings out of companies like Microsoft. You know, so earnings growth is still very good. Obviously, now the valuation of the market has come in, and seasonally, the two strongest months seasonally of the year are November and December. So if history repeats itself, that will benefit the market. And then finally, we do have the midterm elections. And typically, the market has been up 12 months after the midterm elections every time since 1940. So that would also mean let's get through this and you know, get a little bit of uncertainty out of the way, and the market should end up the year pretty good.
No, I think that's a consistent stat, and maybe we'll come back to that because I do want to address the midterm elections with you. That being said, I feel reminiscent of February when we had that very fast, very quick deleveraging event. Markets just tripped over each other. The algorithms and the computers took control, mowing everything down somewhat indiscriminately. Again, indiscriminate selling. Can you comment on why the speed of the markets is so much quicker today than what it appeared to be in the past?
Yes, you know, so there's so much money these days in ETFs, in hedge funds, products that automatically sell you out if, you know, certain levels are breached. You know, so the trading has become frantic and very quick. You know, so what you have to do is you have to guard against that. And guard against that, you know, to us means you don't participate in that. Meaning, you know, the market sold off. We didn't change what we do. We didn't change our positions. We weren't going to de-risk our portfolios because it was too fast with too much money just trading stocks that most of them, people aren't behind that making decisions. A lot of it is computerized. A lot of it is, you know, basic ETFs where you buy, you know, big swatches of the market. So when they sell that, they're basically selling every stock in that ETF versus keeping the good ones and selling the bad ones.
No, I think, and we talk with all of our clients, all of our families, about what I call the dehumanization of the market elements. You know, in particular, our director of trading here at the firm used to be on the floor of the NYSE. Jeffrey can attest to the change that we've seen and how things work from open outcry to a new system based on computerization and algorithms. And it doesn't make markets bad. It just makes how they trade a little bit different than what we've been used to in our previous past. You know, something that's key that you talked about that's in the headlines is the tariffs. And something I have found from the public events we've done on WBBM, WGN, Fox, is a lot of people don't get the opportunity to actually understand what a tariff really is. Could you comment on what a tariff is and break down maybe some examples of where these tariffs have come in place that are showing up in some of the data, as you mentioned, you know, cost inputs, right? Material cost, transportation cost, et cetera.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So, you know, simply tariffs are taxes. So I'm going to give a basic example. Now, this isn't an actual true example, but I'm going to do it just for ease. And, you know, let's just take a bicycle manufacturer in China. So actually, bicycles are not having tariffs on them right now, but let's just take that as an example. Say Target buys bicycles at $100 a bicycle from China, and then they sell them to the consumer at $150. Okay, so now, so if there's a tariff on that, and the tariffs are now 10, 15%, all of a sudden, that bicycle costs $115. Now, who's going to pay that extra $15? Does Target try to get the manufacturer to eat some of it? Yep, they'll try to do that. Target maybe eats a little bit of that, and that hurts their margin. Over time, though, they do try to pass the bulk of that cost onto you, the consumer. You know, so if you're looking for a bike, a $100 bike, you know, 6 months from now maybe turns into a $112 bike. You know, so that does hurt spending, that does hurt the consumer. The actual examples are more on the industrial side. You know, so steel, aluminum, they have tariffs. So when Caterpillar buys steel to make their big machinery, they buy some from China, and now all of a sudden that steel is, you know, 30-40% more expensive. So now they have, now again, they try to be more competitive, more productive, so they try to eat a little bit of the cost, but ultimately they start passing that cost on to construction companies that buy their equipment. You know, so costs are starting to go up. Tariffs are a big deal. So right now it's not a big deal, but if Trump increases, you know, from 10% to 25% on the existing tariffs, and if he imposes the rest of the imports from China, which is another $260 billion, if he puts tariffs on those, you know, that would hurt because a lot of those products are consumer products. So we would see that coming through in higher consumer prices. So that would be certainly a negative to the market, and the current tariffs are a bit of a negative to the market.
I think that's a fantastic explanation. You know, something we have to address, because it's in the paper, it's in the news, I want to come back to interest rates. And I don't want to be dismissive of the fact that mortgages now cost 5%, because of course so many of us have tremendous perspective. I mean, my first mortgage was just shy of 10. I'm sure there's people on this call today listening around the country who had mortgages in the teens. So at times we kind of laugh when people panic over 5% mortgages. But we acknowledge together that there's an entire generation of home buyers, specifically 18 to 37 years old, who's never even seen a 5% mortgage. So I can understand why initially we've seen this seize up and slow down in refinance applications, this seize up and slow down in housing. But historically, because I've seen this before, markets actually tend to do well during the initial phases of interest rate increases. A, am I correct in that statement? And B, why is that?
Yes, Craig, you are correct. So typically when interest rates start going up, the market likes that because it means that the economy is strong or improving. So typically it means corporate earnings are going to be better, the economy is better. The market likes that. So, you know, so actually we're still in that phase here because we're not near the point that interest rates are going to put us in a recession. So again, a lot of people are blaming higher rates, the Federal Reserve, for, you know, as part of this recent sell-off. And that is true, but typically when you get rates initially climbing, that is good for the economy and it's good for the market. You know, the question becomes you just don't want the Federal Reserve to go too fast, too far.
Makes all the sense in the world to me. So now we're on to the midterms. You know, and you mentioned something that I've seen in the Wall Street Journal, I've seen it on TV, that time and time again, I believe the number is 18 of the last 18, or you made a reference all the way back to 1940, that we always see a little bit of seasonality of weakness accompanied with these midterm elections. But then in the ensuing 12-month period, we have not had a single 12-month period post a midterm election that has created a negative return for the markets. In fact, on average, in 18 of the last 18 midterm elections, the average return in the ensuing 12 months has actually been just shy of 14%. What do you think happens here and why?
Yeah, you know, so, yeah, it's a very good statistic because it's been so consistent. And I think the same thing happens this time around. Again, you go to the underlying fundamentals and they're good. You kind of get the uncertainty of the elections out of the way. So there is uncertainty, you know, what happens here. And typically, with a lot of midterm elections, typically part of Congress, House, Senate, or both, typically they go to the, typically the existing party loses at least one of those. And right now, for this election, the Senate is expected to be retained by the Republicans. The House is expected, it's close, but the House is expected to flip to the Democrats. Okay, so what does that do? That creates gridlock in Washington again. And actually, gridlock is pretty good for the market, because the market doesn't like uncertainty and surprises. So if you get gridlock, typically that has been good for the markets.
No, that seems very logical. I mean, the market likes gridlock. We remove some of the uncertainty. And again, there's definitely a lot of uncertainty coming into election cycles these days, now that people no longer trust polling. So with that being said, you know, as we bring this to a conclusion, we've got clients where it's a little bit past 8 a.m. in the morning, you know, out on the West Coast. We have people out east today. It's 30 minutes before the lunch hour. What would be your closing remarks? What is your suggestion for investors that are out there today working on getting retired, or those who are already retired? What are your best talking points and investment ideologies to wrap up today's call?
Yeah, so you always want to be diversified. You know, so you want your income stream, you want your safety assets, and certainly you could get those in fixed income and municipal securities. You know, so you do want a good part of your portfolio in that. You know, but we are living longer these days too. And the market does, the stock market does offer the best returns through time. You know, so you do want to have some money in the stock market as well, simply because that's your growth vehicle. And don't get disturbed or upset with, you know, corrections in the market. They do happen. You know, talk to Craig and your advisors to make sure that your positioning is still correct. But I wouldn't be selling stocks here. I'd actually be buying more stocks here. You know, do look out and be concerned as we, you know, move through 19 into 20. Eventually, we will have a recession, and that is not good for the stock market. So, you know, be aware of that. But other than that, though, be diversified, have safety, have income, but have a growth vehicle, and that is typically stocks.
No, I think that makes all the sense in the world. And again, your talking point that I want to go ahead and champion, that I agree with strongly, is that with the economy being positive, the earnings being a big positive, valuations trading at 15.5 times forward earnings, that's the historic norm, the weight and preponderance of evidence would suggest that this is nothing more than a correction in what is going to be an ongoing bull market. So I think all of us need to make sure our allocations are in line, making sure that we go ahead and accept that the only free lunch in investing is to remain diversified, diversified in particular for our revenue and our income streams in retirement, and focus on the seasonality of the market. Again, history doesn't necessarily repeat itself, but history oftentimes rhymes. And as we move into what is traditionally the strongest portion of what we deem to be that presidential election cycle, aka November, December, coming off of the midterm elections, I think we just need to make sure that we're well positioned. So with that, to everybody on the call, thank you very much for taking time out of a busy Thursday to listen to our quarterly comments. If you have any follow-up, please go ahead and contact the Wealth Management Group team. We're here to speak with you. And with that, Lisa, if you'd be so kind to conclude the call, provide the disclosures, we'll end it there.
Thank you, Craig. The opinions voiced on this call are for the general information only and are not intended to provide or be construed as providing specific investment advice or recommendations for any individual securities. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Nuveen Investments is not affiliated with LPL Financial or Wealth Management Group. Thank you for joining us for our call today, and we wish you a great day.